Welcome to the Under the Capes podcast, your geek business guide. I'm going under the capes of bloggers, cosplayers, authors, and other entrepreneurs to learn how they've built a following around doing what they love. I'm your host, Tim Luty, and today we're going under the cape of Matthew Fillion, author of The Indestructibles. Happy Labor Day, entrepreneurs. Hope everyone is having a great long weekend. So far today has been pretty much a relaxing day, sitting around the house reading, catching up on the Indestructible series. So my guest this week is Matthew Fillion, and he is a writer. He's also acted in feature films, including the sci-fi romance Harvest Moon and the independent horror flick Livestock, and he's done screenwriting and directing. His directing debut was the romantic comedy Certainly Never, but he is most well known for his book series The Indestructibles, which has been described as the Breakfast Club meets the JLA, and that's actually the tagline that drew me over to his booth at Boston Comic Con. So Matt's a regular at a lot of conventions around the New England area. He's a Boston local, and his series The Indestructibles follows a solar powered girl, a ballerina vigilante, a boy with an alien sharing his brain, a Whovian with a black hole for a heart, a werewolf with confidence issues. And they all come together for a new young team of superheroes. The fourth book came out last year. And recently, Matt has extended the shared universe, which he's now dubbed the Indestructiverse, with the Echo and the Sea. He also regularly writes one-shots in the Instructable universe, holiday specials that he gives away for free as great ways to promote the brand. So we talk about a lot of that in the interview today. He's a career writer who worked for over 10 years as a freelancer, worked as a journalist, a screenwriter. And so he shares a lot of awesome insights for anyone looking to become a writer, whether it's through fiction or any kind of writing. And we also talk about, working the con scenes, his creative process, and what you can expect from the future of his book series and his writing career. So it was a really great interview, and let's dive right in. All right, I'm now joined by Matthew Fillion, the author of the Indestructibles series. Matt, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, so can you tell us a little bit about how you started writing and how that led to writing The Indestructibles?
Sure. It's funny because I actually found, when they make you do a yearbook when you're in like fifth or sixth grade?
Yeah.
And they tell you predict a career, and I found it when I was picking up some boxes from my folks' house, and I had actually written down that I wanted to be an author, and I don't remember doing that. I'm like, I didn't want to be an author when I was in fifth grade. What is this all about? So it's sort of like I came full circle. I've always been a writer professionally of some kind. I've been a newspaper reporter. I've been a healthcare writer. I've been a marketing writer. I've been a screenwriter, directed a couple films. And somehow all those years later, I came all the way back around to the beginning and after, having written and directed a feature film and having 40 people counting on me to have a project finish. I said, well, I want to do the next one for me. So why don't I do, if you write a novel, really, if you write a book and nobody reads it, you're the only one who's disappointed, as opposed to if you make a film and nobody sees it, you get this entire crew and cast that feels let down. So I think I'll write something fun and I'll do it for me, and I'll write something that's, something that I was going to have fun with, and superheroes have always been the sort of thing that I've loved, and you know, I wanted to be a comic book writer for a while, but I can't draw, so I'm limited to the word side of things. And so I just took a shot at it, and that happened to be the piece of writing that caught people's attention and found an audience, and then it kind of snowballed from there. I wrote one, and people read it, so I thought, well, I'll write a sequel, write another sequel, and I keep joking around. I don't know when people are going to just decide they're done with it, so I'll just keep writing as long as people are enjoying reading it, because I just feel lucky that people found it in the first place, especially like after, you know, really I've kind of had my foot in every type of writing possible, which I actually think makes for it's helpful as a novelist too, to having really tried everything else, so you can kind of take all those other skills that you pick up along the way. I think it makes you a better writer.
Yeah, because I mean, you mentioned that you've directed, you've acted. Was choosing to focus just on writing really just, you know, being the sole person responsible, or, you know, as you said, not letting anyone down, or what was kind of the main reasoning for focusing on writing?
Well, I always knew writing was sort of where it was my strongest skill set. You know, I always said I'm a mediocre actor, I'm a half decent director, I'm a pretty good writer, you know. So it's sort of like, you know, I won't toot my horn on anyone, but if I had to pick one that it was, you know, my least weak skill set, it was that. And also really the one thing that I've wanted to do is tell stories, and it really didn't matter to me which format I told those stories in. And when I wrote the first Indestructibles book, I gave myself a time limit. I said, I'll write it and I'll give myself a year to try to get it out there. And if I can't get it published, or if I can't find a readership, then I'll go back to film, or I'll go do something else. Because I'm pursuing this dream of telling stories, as opposed to, I want to be a novelist, or I want to be a screenwriter. I just want to tell stories. And so I gave myself a time limit, and I happen to, get lucky with it. And it is pure luck. I mean, that's one of the things that I try to tell anybody who wants to be a writer. It's, you're only really controlling about 10% of what goes on, and the other 90% is pure luck. And so just kind of don't worry about the luck part, because you can't fix that. Just do the best work that you can. And I just happened to get lucky within that time frame that I gave myself, which is funny, because sometimes I look back and go, God, I miss making movies. but I can't complain, because I'm writing superhero books and people are reading them. So what do I have to complain about? Yeah. Oh, I can't make movies right now. I'm too busy. That's a horrible, horrible thing.
Too busy with a superhero series.
That's... Yeah. You know, that's, the thing I worry about is, now that I'm writing, you know, writing these books, and if you were to envision turning them into a script, they're big budget. And I had developed, a habit of writing things for indie budgets. So I'm like, have I lost my ability to write a cheap movie? You know, like, you know, am I no longer able to write something that doesn't involve like people flying and explosions and everything else? Like, one of these days I'll give it a shot and try to see if I still got the ability to get my mind in that place. Cause it's a very different type of storytelling.
Yeah. Cause this, you can just let your mind go in crazy directions. You can't really write an indie comedy and have a living hurricane show up.
Exactly. It's funny, because that was, I had done a romance, the last project I did before The Indestructibles, it was a romantic comedy. It had a cast of six people. It was a talkie, you know, the biggest special effect was mounting a camera on the hood of a car for a driving scene. And so I really think part of the motivation for writing superheroes was like, okay, you've done it with no budget. What if you had no limits? You know, what if you can make a sentient hurricane and a girl who can, you know, whose hands burst into flames, and you don't have to worry about somebody telling you, no, that's not in the budget. And I mean, I've been a comic book guy at heart the whole time. So it was almost like I learned how to write inexpensive, low budget stories, but I'd always wanted to write these big epic stories. So it was more like a return to what I'd always hoped to write, versus sort of like trying to trick myself into writing this big bombastic type of story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What were your influences when you were coming up with, you know, the plot and the characters? Cause all the characters are awesome, and they all kind of, have influences of different like superhero tropes, and then kind of take their own spin on it?
Yeah, I actually, when I was writing it, I kind of had to admit, like, I think we all read the same superhero comics, we all see the same movies, we all watch the same TV show. So I almost had to like have these characters acknowledge, like, listen, we all know we're coming from the same place. Like one of the characters, Emily, is she just flat out, she would go to Comic-Con, right? Like that's, she'd hang out there. And that's sort of one of the things that I said, I can either pretend that all of this sci-fi influence and comic book influence doesn't exist, or I can just own it. And I thought it was easier to own it and just go, you know, these characters are going to love the same stories that we do. And I grew up, you know, my first memories, you know, as a sentient human being are Star Wars, you know, so it's sort of like that's, you know, I've always had these, you know, giant stories in my life. And I was a comic book reader. I was I was sitting down in front of the 1966 Batman on Saturday mornings to keep me quiet. You know, it's what my parents would put on TV to keep me out of the way. So I mean, top to bottom, from a storytelling perspective, that's right where I came from. And all of these characters I had created them separately over the years, with the idea of maybe someday I'll write a story about, you know, this ballerina vigilante, or maybe someday I'll do something with Doc Silence. And so they all had existed, and some of them had even had little like short character creation pieces in my notebook, my desktop. I haven't handwritten anything for a long time, but and what it was is I didn't know which one to use. So I said, what if I throw them all in the room at the same time and see what happens? And turns out they were a lot of fun together. They're actually more fun as a group than writing them individually. So I'm like, well, I guess I'm doing a book about a super team. instead of, you know, one story about one character. And and they kind of own the influences. You know, you can see, you know, if there's a solar power girl, we don't have to say out loud who you know, where that came from. It's pretty clear. Or even like the dancer. I knew a lot of ballet dancers when I was younger, and the injuries they would work through, like break one would break her entire foot and go out and dance the next day. I'm like, you know, a professional athlete, you know, a football player would be out for the season. He breaks his whole foot and you're out there. You know what? It's cool. I'll just take some Advil and go out there. And so I thought, you know, instead of being a rich orphan, you know, this dancer loses her livelihood and her family and decides to, instead of giving up, to go try to make the world a better place. Using that sort of toughness and, you know, mental fortitude. So I kind of subscribe to that idea that there's only so many stories ever told, you know, and we just kind of keep trying to figure out the world through these same types of stories. And I think it's okay to admit when we've got influences.
Yeah, I was actually reading something earlier today about the like the psyche required to be Batman, like for him to do all that stuff. And it's funny that you've created, like, I actually, like, Kate's my favorite character, because I actually, like, believe that, like, the psyche, like, she's a, you know, like you said, a dancer who's just, like, really hardcore and, like, pushing herself through all these injuries, and, like, she's pushed her body to, you know, its peak.
Mm-hmm.
And with, you know, the loss, obviously, and it definitely is a funny twist on a common story that still makes it believable.
Yeah, it's that idea of, you know, because we love the idea of someone, whether it's, you know, a Bruce Willis in some film or Batman or some other character that you know, pushes himself to the limit without any special abilities involved, but we love that kind of story. And I like writing Kate because I'm a closet perfectionist. I'm not one of those, like, I try to hide how much of a perfectionist I am, but I love writing that idea of, like, no, you're better than that. You can do better than this. This is not, you know, the conversations I have alone in the middle of the night while I'm editing, you know, and I like that people connect with her. People connect with her more than any other character that I hear, at least when I hear feedback. You know, maybe somewhere out there, there's a ton of people that just are really into Billy and they don't tell me about it. But I think a lot of us, you know, are always trying to be better than what we are. And I think that's something that is, like, if not universal, it's very common for people to always reach for that next level of just being more. I think we all want to be more than what we are sometimes. And I'm not supposed to have favorites, but writing Kate is some of my favorite work that I do, because that's something that I think a lot of people can connect with, that just always striving to be better.
Yeah, it's definitely the one I've connected with the most. And yeah, I love her mantra of just, I can be better.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of expected you to run into more Emilys at the cons that you go to, though.
You know, actually, there have been a couple of, when I think of cosplayers that I've run into, I've seen a couple of Emilys, I've seen a couple of Docs, one Dancer, one Straylight, and someone who was running around in a red hoodie one time. So there was a Titus once upon a time. He was not in full werewolf costume. Emily's funny, because I had a reader ask me one time, see, what's it like to have your most popular character be a 15-year-old girl when you're a grown man? And I'm like, well, it wasn't awkward till you brought it up. And now,
made it awkward.
Yeah, now it's awkward. Especially because I sometimes refer to Emily as me when I've had that one pot of coffee too much. and I think Emily is kind of us in a lot of ways too, right? She's the one that, she's seen all the movies. She's the pop culture machine, but she's also so self-deprecating. She comes across as very highly confident, but there's a lot to her that's holding back. And I think she's almost, I kind of feel like she could be a geek icon at some point, you know? And I do, she does connect with a lot of readers, because she's the comic relief. I actually just recently did, not so much a spinoff, but a sort of set in the same universe. And my biggest concern is, will people read a book without Emily? Like, that's how much people have gravitated to her over the years, that I'm like, I don't know if a book without Emily will fly. This isn't an indestructible story. This, like, there's no Emily in this, and people are going to give me hell for it. I don't know.
Yeah, what was the decision? So you're talking about Echo in the Sea. What was the decision to start spinning off and kind of building the Indestructiverse?
Well, it's funny, and thank you for name dropping the. Yeah. I can't take credit for Indestructiverse. That was a reader actually said that to me, and I flat out said, I'm stealing that. I will never take credit for it, but I'm stealing that. Part of it was that I've had Echo in the Sea in mind since I wrote the first book. I always knew there was these other parallel characters, but I also knew that I wanted to get multiple Indestructible books out there, and I had these first four books in mind as well, so I sort of had this whole universe in my head. But I also, I didn't want to feel like I was relying on the same characters over and over again, because after a while they start to write themselves, right? They you get so used to writing. I can speak Emily, you know, on a whim if I need to. But I wanted to make sure I wasn't losing my edge and being able, and if I make sure I was still able to write new characters. And also the books had come out in such rapid succession that I wanted to have something else, while staying in the same universe, have a different vibe. It's a little bit more mature than the other books. It's a little darker. So I just wanted to explore a different part of the universe. But I've actually, Echo and her crew have existed in my mind for really since right after the first book came out, and it was sort of a decision, do I write a sequel or do I write a spinoff? And it's actually, I'm kind of curious about new readers, because you could, if you read Echo first, you'll actually have a different perspective of the entire series. Just because it world builds in a different area of the Indestructiverse. And it was fun. I had not been so anxious about publishing a book, since the first one, when Echo came out, because I was so worried that people were only going to like my my main cast, which, you know, is, I don't know if that was an irrational fear or not. So and people seem to be enjoying it a lot, which is nice, because I really like the cast. I actually want to do more with them, because they're a lot of fun to write. But I also need to get back on the horse and start writing the next Indestructible story too.
Another good problem to have, your main characters are too loved.
Well, it's more like, you know, can I write well enough with the other characters to, you know, like, am I only good at this one thing, or am I only, you know, sufficient at one thing? But
yeah, so it was really a way to challenge yourself and kind of mm-hmm. spread out into new styles.
Exactly. And I wanted to really just try it because I like Echo's more of a myth and magic kind of feel to it. And that's whereas the Indestructibles are very much like the pop, you know, pop superhero, real world side of things. And I'm like, well, I like the magical, surreal kind of things. There's some stuff that happens with Doc Silence, the mentor in the first, in the main series, exploring, you know, what magic does and how it works. And, I really like writing magic, and I'm a mythology junkie and everything. So I wanted to sort of, you know, poke around in this other part of the Indestructiverse and see what was going on there. So now it's just a matter of I gotta try to find enough hours in the year to explore both sets of both series from now on. Now I'm in trouble.
Yeah. Speaking of that, what's your writing process as far as how you schedule time to get the writing done and kind of everything? How do you put the books together?
It's I have what I would call a punishing schedule that I wouldn't recommend for anybody else, unless I mean, everybody has their own styles, but this is not my method. I don't think is the healthiest, but I usually don't sit down to write until I know exactly what I'm gonna. I'll have a full plot. I always thought I was more improvisational, but apparently I'm actually very much a planner when it comes to these things. And so I'll say, well, it takes me about 90 days to write the book, but I'll have been planning it for 6 to 9 months beforehand. So it's I kind of cheat a little bit. Like, oh yeah, I'm sitting at my desk for 3 months straight. And what I do is I commit full-fledged, you know, I sit down, I write at night just out of habit. And I will do, you know, 4, 6, 8 hours of writing a night, every night, no days off until the manuscript is done. And I hold myself to it. I make it, you know, it's almost like, you know, this is my writing season. I have to commit to it. Which is also why I don't sit down until I know exactly what I do. So I don't spend a lot of time. A lot of writers will kind of mince over sentences or try to figure out, you know, the paragraph structure. I actually really know what I'm going to put down before I sit down, so it helps me to move quickly. So I know a lot of other writers would, I've been threatened with physical violence when I tell them, oh, it takes me about 90 days to write a book. But that's not giving enough credit to the amount of time I spend planning it out ahead of time. So it really is months and months more than that. But I'm very structured and very sort of locked in when I'm doing the actual writing.
So you get all the kind of struggling out of the way with the outline. How detailed are the outlines? Like, is it chapter by chapter or just rough story strokes?
It's the most low tech thing you'll ever see. I have a big slab of cardboard and I use Post-its. Nice. And I'll do Post-its per chapter, and then I use the Post-its so if I need to move plot points around, I can just, you know, rip them off and put them someplace else. But my writing style just happens to be, because I came out of screenwriting, scene by scene anyway. Mm-hmm. So each chapter is basically its own scene. So I'm able to kind of structure it like a screenplay, where I can move scenes around as opposed to a more organic literary style where the chapters have more than one scene and are kind of longer and denser. So in a way, I kind of got lucky there that my style is scene by scene. So, well, okay, this scene is clearly going to happen sooner. I can take that off the board and move it up. And I don't go into deep detail because I generally have, I've kind of pre-written the dialogue in my head. I kind of know what I'm going to say, and I've just got sort of buzzwords. I name every chapter. It was something that came along later on in the series where I started using specific lines of dialogue from the chapter to name each one. And that's sort of my reminder of what the core of the scene is and what the heart of what I'm getting at each scene is. I start planning at the end. I know what the big set piece at the end of the story is going to be, and I work backwards from there. So I always kind of know, well, I'm going to have such and such happen. I don't want to ruin the any plot points for anybody else, but like the so the big events when in each of the books is always sort of a big set piece in the third act, and that I know what's going to happen there. Well, I want so and so to do this, and that will be that will make people cry, or that will or that will, you know, or that will hopefully get some gasps out of the audience, and then I work backwards to get them there. And that helps me stay like I know a lot of writers will write their last chapter first, but I use that like my that's my reward. you don't get to write the last. You're not allowed to write the last chapter till you get there. Like so, it's almost like the carrot before the horse, you know, to try to trick myself into staying motivated because I really want to write that big scene. But then that also helps on a, you know, purely on a like a clinical level as a writer, like don't write things that you might have to cut out later kind of thing. If I write the set piece, then I'm committed to it as opposed to I can adjust it, depending on what comes out of the writing process for the rest of the book.
Yeah. And I think that makes for a good end product because that kind of big third act event is usually the make or break for most books as far as whether people go away satisfied.
It's fun. It's I always thought because every writer has like some writers like middles are hard or endings are hard. Like we've all got our weak point. And like for me, I always worry like, is there enough meat in the middle of the book? I know what I want at the beginning. I know what I want at the end. And I think if you know as a writer, I mean, everybody works differently, but for me, what helps is if I need to know what they're working towards, right from the beginning. I always ask like, what is their very last end goal here? And that's, that helps me motivate them through the entire story and try to figure out what do I need to put in their way to make it interesting for them to get there? Mm-hmm. Because I don't like characters making dumb decisions just to help the plot get more interesting. I don't like, you know, sort of like the things like, why are they making this one bad decision? I'd rather look at where I want them to be and see, like, how many challenges do I need to give them as opposed to kind of forcing them to make bad decisions for drama's sake.
Yeah, have you, as you started to write, you know, more in detail, kind of realized, like, oh, this is out of character and kind of had to go back to the drawing board, or are you able to kind of see those scenes in your head as you're outlining and keep to that outline pretty well?
I'm usually able to, what I'll find is the middle will adjust a lot. Like sometimes the characters, I know it sounds, you know, makes you sound schizophrenic, but the characters do surprise you. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they'll do or say things that you don't see coming. And you gotta leave some wiggle room for yourself there. Mostly what I find is that sometimes I'll like a character more than I thought, especially with the villains. I struggle to have pure evil or actual villainous characters. I kind of like the idea of villains that have motives that you can understand. Mm-hmm. And that makes them hard to like, okay, how do I put them through the ringer? Cause now I don't hate them, you know, it's almost easier when you hate your villains a little bit, to put them, at the end of having a building thrown at them as is not uncommon in superhero stories. So I have had to change. I've never had to change the actual plot point, but sometimes the physics of it will have to change. Well, you know, this is not going to work this way, or this person is going to be in the scene and I didn't think they would be, or, but I've generally been able to stay pretty on track with how we get there, to that third act ending.
Awesome. So yeah, and when you started, so you kind of have a career as a more of like a writer of, you know, journalism and technical and marketing stuff. Mm-hmm. Did you, when you decided to write this, did you take time off of that, or were you juggling the two at the same time? What was the, when you first started, what was the schedule like?
Oh, I think that's why I don't think I'll ever stop writing at night, because when I wrote the first book, I've never had less than two jobs at once. I was a freelancer for a very long time, which means you have like 10 jobs at once.
Yeah,
and,
I'm a freelancer right now, so I definitely know that.
You never say no to the next gig, right? Like, yeah. No, I'm going to take a vacation. Well, I guess I'm not going to take a vacation. So I actually think that helped with the discipline of writing fiction because, I was a freelancer for almost 10 years and so I'm working alone in isolation at home. I'm not going into an office anywhere. So I was fully structured as a writer and editor that way. And I never really took any time off. The only time I've ever taken time off is to go take the books to Comic Cons. Really, when it first started up, I'd have to take a couple of days off to travel and stuff like that. But it's I know why people need time to. I actually know that I'm just lucky that I've apparently a workaholic and I'm okay doing 18-hour days where I would work during the day. And I've always been the sort of person where if I'm not working at a given hour, I get confused why I'm not, like, it's which probably makes me an absolute horrible person to be around socially. But I was working days, or if it was a project that required me to be working, like, if my client was in another country or something like that, working off hours, I would write the book around that. And I think that's why I got into this habit of, like, after dinner, 8 or 9, 8 o'clock or 9 o'clock at night, sit down and then write to the wee hours of the morning. And I also don't sleep a heck of a lot either, so that works in my favor too. It's when you get an extra 4 hours in your day because you're kind of an insomniac, it kind of helps to find time to do that extra project. I was not a full-time employee, but I was working full-time as a freelancer the entire time that the first couple of books were written.
Nice. That's probably a good way to go, because you're a little more flexible in case you get on a run and can kind of end up, spending an all-nighter writing.
Yeah, it definitely helped with, if I'm going to write till 3 or 4 in the morning, I can, because I was on my own clock, like, well, nobody's actually going to know that I slept till 9 o'clock because it was freelancing. Like, no, I was on a conference call. No, I was sleeping till 9 o'clock. But I took advantage of that situation. But it was still, and most authors, I think, have to, because it's not, you don't write books to get rich. even well known authors are not, they're not movie stars. It benefits you to have the discipline to be able to do multiple projects.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you mentioned traveling to different Comic-Cons. So we met at Boston Comic-Con almost a month ago now. How long have you been doing cons, and how have those been for you?
I jumped right in with it. I had told, because you'll take books to literary festivals or literary events, and you might sell a couple copies, you might meet some other cool authors, but I'd never seen much traction with finding new readership at them. But I'm like, these are superhero books, I should try. And I'm from Boston originally, so Boston's my hometown show. And and the first year that the book came out in April, I think it was April. And so I did Boston Comic Con that year. How's this for strange luck? That was the year that Boston Comic Con got pushed from April to August, because of the bombing. The date changed. And so I said, well, like, I guess I'll try it and see what happens. And so I went, and I sold a lot of books, which is not really the point. You go to these things to market yourself and to meet new people, but I met a lot of new readers, and it just got a lot of traction. And I'm like, well, I think this is where I belong. And so I tried another Comic-Con, and it just was a really great way to connect with people that that this type of story resonated with. And I've actually found that the thing that connects everybody at Comic-Con, whether you're there for comics or whether you're there for The Walking Dead or Game of Thrones or whatever, it's everybody goes for stories, right? Like, that's what kind of connects us all. And whether it's a book or a movie or a TV show or a comic, it's all about, we all just love stories. And so, of course, there's a pretty good chance you're going to run into people that are looking for a new story to read at a Comic-Con. And And I've actually said, because the first year I walked in there, I would go to Comic Cons as a little kid. And if you told, 8-year-old me that I'd have a table at Boston Comic Con, I'd be like, freak out. And I've actually said,
that was the dream in the yearbook you should have put.
Right. And I've actually said, like, please don't ever let this turn into work, because Comic Con still doesn't work. My knees think it's work. It's those cement floors as I shake my fist at the sky. But
feels like work on Monday, but during
it feels like joining the circus for the weekend. And I've always said I enjoy it. I have fun with it. I like meeting the other artist alley denizens, and I like meeting new readers, and I like meeting the cosplayers. And I just don't ever want it to it never feels like a job. It just feels like a place that I get to hang out for the weekend with a bunch of people that love the same stuff that I do. And maybe some of them will read my book someday, and that's really worked out. I just got back from, I was down at Trificon in Connecticut, the weekend after Boston Comic Con, and I'm setting up my winter schedule right now. I'm not quite sure where I'll end up, but, I don't know that it would work for every writer or every type of book, but it's sort of just the right fit for the Indestructibles is to go to Comic Con. And the one thing I miss is I don't get to walk around. I don't get to shop or go get autographs, or I keep saying I've been in the same building as Stan Lee like 20 times and I've never seen him, and I'm gonna regret that someday. But
it's delightful.
I've literally been in the same building as, like, the guy who wrote the characters that inspired me to write this book. And I've never had a chance to, like, step away for 2 hours and go get his autograph or get a photo with him or anything like that. But, I love con season. It's, the only thing there is I can't get any writing done. I'm too wiped at the end of the day. But, I always tell other writers that are just getting started, like, go where the people that love the stuff that you love hang out. And that's where you might find the audience that you're hoping to find. With all of these types of stories, books and otherwise, it's fandom comes from loving the stories that are involved, and so go where the people that like the stories you like are, and maybe you'll find your tribe,
Yeah, and especially the Comic Cons, it's everyone there is pretty passionate consumers of all kinds of different media. So I know I've gotten a lot of different books. Either seen them at the conventions like yours and then started reading, or just got it handed a promotional copy and started reading it that way. It's definitely a great way to find new stuff.
Yeah. I love the shows that blend us all together. Like, sometimes they'll have like an author's row, but I like a show where I'm next to a comic book vendor on one side and somebody selling buttons on the other side of me. Yeah. And just like, I love the shows where we're all jumbled together, because I feel like, there's a surprise factor as people are walking by, like, oh, like, handmade baby Groots and a novel about superheroes. Oh, and look at these cool t-shirts. And I just love, like, I love the smorgasbord kind of vibe of shows like that. I always kind of feel a little lonely when they put all us authors in one row, because we're all kind of like, I kind of want to hang out with the guy that sells. I was at one show where I was next to a guy selling, crystals, like spiritual crystals. And I'm like, well, this is awesome. Like, what does that one do? It was a chance to, you come away with like with more stories to tell. It really is like I'm reusing the same thing I've already said, but you run away and join the circus. You get to be one of the performers.
Yeah. And yeah, one of the things I like that you've done at least the past couple cons is you've offered some of your like short stories in the Instructiverse, if that's what they're called, short stories, for free that weekend.
Yep. And those are fun because they're such a, for me, it's a low commitment. It's a story that might not fit as a full novel, or might not fit as, it might be a distraction from the main story. And, so I'll write up a 20, 30 page short, and I call them one shots because of the, what they called the comics that were like a single, single issue story, but that's just me being a nerd. It gives me a chance to give them away, give something back to the readers. And it gives me a chance to explore a piece of the Indestructiverse that I haven't done before. And it gives me a chance to play with characters or parts of the Indestructiverse that the books might not get to, and have a chance to share that out to the readers, sort of in the off season between books. And the fact that it's so easy to give them away. The hardest part is making sure people know, you know, it's like, it's free all weekend. Please go get it. I've actually had people wait like, oh no, I want to pay for it. No, seriously. I want you to have it for free. Take it. It's a gift. And I've legitimately had people wait till like the free giveaway is over, and then like pick it up for 99 cents a week later. I'm like, oh, but I appreciate the thought, but this is my gift to you. Especially I'll do a holiday story, or I try to do a holiday story every year. And in that one, I'm like, please, it's my Christmas gift to you guys. Can you please take the book for free? That's what I'm, why I'm doing it for. But those are fun because it lets me play around with characters that are not necessarily the main focus of the book, or explore different parts of the lives of the characters that the books might not have time to explore.
Yeah, I'm halfway through the second book, Breakout. But I picked up the past two one shots that you've done, but I haven't read them yet because I don't want to ruin anything.
Yeah, I gotta save. Which is the last? I'm trying to think of it because I know The Monsters We Make is about one of the side characters. So that one actually is specifically a piece of the story it's a piece of the story that didn't fit with the main series, but people really wanted to know more about this guy. So it's that one, it's funny, you can almost put warning labels like, you please don't read this before you read this book, or you're gonna ruin something for you. I try really hard not to put like serious spoilers in the giveaways.
Yeah, one of them was you know, when the Instructables first got out of
yeah.
I'm going to download this, but I don't need to know anymore.
It's funny that there's usually a full fledged author note at the beginning too, like warning, this takes place after. And I don't know if it's something that other series run into because there isn't so much ancillary content. But I'm super careful, especially because I'm such a stickler for reading stories in order to. It comes from growing up reading comics. Like, no, I can't read issue such and such. I got to get this one first. And it's kind of fun for me in that way to like, no, this takes place. You know, I want to have like the little editor's note that they used to do in comics. Yeah. Like, to read more about this, see issue such and such in Namor. and the one shots are. I love doing those because they're it's a short term project. I don't disappear for 4 months to write the book. I do it in a few weeks, and I'm able to get something out fast and new for readers to keep in touch and keep the story going.
Yeah, I was reading a Marvel comic last week, and the previously on at the beginning of the story gave all the information from another story, which I had already read. And then at the bottom, warning, please read this story ahead of time. You got to put that at the top.
It's a layout problem right there. That's an editorial decision that went wrong. So you got to put that above the fold.
But that's one of the things I love about your series with Echo and the Sea and with the one shots is you are kind of creating this very comic booky universe.
Yeah, I've always wondered how that will work out as a prose novel thing. I think it lends itself easily to a comic book world, whether it's, you know, Marvel or DC or Valiant or anybody else. Like that's a format that people were sort of trained for it. You know, like that's just how comic books work. You've got stories that are happening simultaneously and characters that are interrelated. Wolverine appearing in six different issues this month or that kind of thing. And first of all, because books come out so much slower, you know, it really is, you know, it's not
And they're hundreds of pages instead of 15 or 20.
Yeah, it's a commitment to read the next book. You know, it's going to be 300 to 400 pages as opposed to just something you can roll up and put in your back pocket. And I wasn't sure if that would work or not, you know, because I want to tell stories about sort of Doc's old team. For folks that are listening, there was a team previous to the Indestructibles that were kind of the world's heroes, and they're discussed and hinted at, and they show up individually through the story. But, you know, I want to go back and kind of do some of their adventures. Yes. And explore. I've got someday I will write a book called The Life and Times of Doc Silence. I want to write I want to write his origin story. And it's this, I guess I'm building a comic book universe in print with no art at all. Yeah. And I hope people, I love the idea. I really hope that people also enjoy reading it, because I'd like to build a whole universe like this. I'd love to build sort of a whole Indestructiverse that lives and breathes, and maybe even eventually invite other writers to join in and be a part of it. I feel like that's a bit arrogant at this point that anybody would want to share the universe that I'm building. But, you know, maybe someday somebody wants to build something that exists in that same shared universe. And because that's something that I love about comics, is that it's not an individual person. Usually it's a collaborative process with writers and artists and editors and parallel stories and characters that are interwoven and share histories and stuff. And that's harder to do in prose. But that's something that's one of the things that I love the most about the comic book style of writing, and something that I'm hoping I can figure out a way to, kind of bring to novels.
Yeah, because when a new writer brings their style to a comic book, it still kind of has the same, you know, maybe the same artist or maybe just the same look and feel. And with this, it would be, you know, completely different. So that'd be an interesting experiment.
Yeah, I think of because some of the older writers, like, I know, I want to say Arthur Conan Doyle and like H.P. Lovecraft and a lot of writers of that era actually opened up their worlds to other people to write about. Like it was almost open source kind of thing. And, that intrigues me. It's different now. Everything is so locked down, and, you know, ownership is, it's hard enough to protect your book from being pirated, let alone making sure you're sharing sharing the content appropriately. I'm not quite sure how it'll work out, but, that idea of, collaborating with other writers and inviting them into a shared world. I don't know. Maybe it's because I'm a comic book guy at heart, you know, and that's the kind of vibe that made me happy growing up. I love a world that just expands in all directions instead of working in a straight line.
Yeah. So if I start publishing my Indestructibles fan fiction, you won't come down too hard on me?
No. Somebody actually asked me if I found any fan fiction yet today, and I'm like, I haven't yet. And I don't know, as long as it's not, I need forewarning if it's slash fiction. But it's,
all right. I'm on it. Give me 90 days.
All right. That's all it takes, right? You just gotta.
Yeah. I know the secrets now. That's 90 days done.
It's it is funny talk, because every writer works a little bit differently. I've actually made other writers angry when I tell them that that's how fast I write. I'm like, no, I swear to God, there's like a whole year of planning involved ahead of time. It's such an individual pursuit, writing, how everybody, some writers that I know, they shut down on social media completely for 6 months and write a book, and they just disappear off the planet, or they got to go out to the woods somewhere and write on the back of bark to get it done, or, you know, and me, I just need to daydream. That's the main thing. I think that a lot of writers worry too much about, like the technical side of things. Just give your brain time to, you know, get some oxygen in there and daydream and think about the story you want to tell, and hopefully it'll come to you.
Yeah. 'Cause the writers that kind of discover the story as they're writing it may take a little bit longer, but then, you know, some people can't really discover a story and out like while just outlining it. It has to kind of come through that process or
yeah, there's a whole
different
like sort of they call it whether you're a plotter or a pantser, meaning yeah. flying by the seat of your pants. And I swear I thought I was a pantser when I started, and apparently I'm super neurotic and just didn't know it about plotting everything out. But it's almost like you wouldn't. I also don't go on a vacation without, you know, double checking my backpack to make sure I've got both, you know, backup batteries and everything else. I understand the other writer's struggles because that's if you ask me to write on the fly, I might be in panic mode as well.
Yeah. So yeah, what other than the prequel series with Doc Silence's teams? What are the other plans for the Indestructible series? More stories with the main team? More universe building? Look forward to?
I wrote the fourth one thinking, I don't know, is this it? Is this where we end? And I never commit to it being the last one. I try to write each book as if I got hit by a bus tomorrow, then people wouldn't be mad at me for not finishing the series. It's funny, I make that joke, and I can always tell whether somebody's got a morbid sense of humor, like, oh yeah, if you get hit by a bus, and other people get horrified. But I wrote the fourth one. I was debating, I don't know, is that the last one? Maybe it's the last one for a little while. And then I had it was funny. I was at a Comic-Con and a cosplayer walked by with a concept that got me thinking about what parts of the Indestructiverse I haven't explored with the kids yet. And I'm like, well, what if? And I'm like, well, there's book five. All right, then I guess I get a book five to write. Because right now, so far, we've had, you know, sort of the origin story, the when the world finds out about them story. We've done some time travel. We've done some outer space stuff. And I haven't really touched on magic yet. I think that'll be the next piece. So I've got the plot percolating for a fifth book that I'd like to have done by the end of the year, or at least have a draft done by the end of the year so I can get the publisher involved and get the ball rolling there. I didn't know if I was going to want to write a second Echo-based story. I think the Echo characters might actually be more like, instead of it being all about Echo, the main character, just being that part of the world, maybe the next story is more about one of the supporting characters or something like that. But I want to explore them some more. And I'm actually working on a longer one shot, a little bit more bang for the buck, I guess. I've been trying to write this concept of the Indestructibles team getting trapped inside a Dungeons and Dragons session. And I've got the story. I just need to sit down and write it. I'm about 5,000 words into it. And, you know, the best part was figuring out what character classes each one of them would be. And, just kind of geeking out about that. And so
whole story started.
Oh yeah. To tell you the truth, it started off with, cause I've been a fantasy reader my whole life. And I'm like, you know, I could do like a YA style fantasy story. And, you know, and I start running through the characters and I realize what I'm doing is I'm not describing new characters. I'm recreating the Indestructibles as fantasy characters. You know, there's, you know, there could be the Paladin and there can be the Goofy Bard and there could be no, we're definitely this is them. These are the kids all over again. And then I started thinking about what happens if they pick up a cursed copy of a tabletop role playing game that they don't realize is cursed, and suddenly they're stuck there. And how do they get themselves back out? And I don't think it'll support a full novel length, but I think it'll be sort of a novella. Mm-hmm. And it'll give me a chance to. That's a territory I don't get to write about all that much because they're so set in the here and now, like in modern world. So being able to do some almost parody style sword and sorcery stuff, that'll be the next thing that you see, I think, because it's already in process and it's so lighthearted compared to the rest of it. Belligerent goblins and having them try to explain to the grumpier cast members what their cast actually means, what their character class actually means. Like, you get somebody like Kate, who is so no nonsense. This is not someone who's ever going to sit down and play a tabletop game.
Emily has to explain how D&D works to all of them.
Exactly. And then you find out who used to play and didn't want to admit it until, you know, that'll be something. I won't reveal who, but somebody totally outs himself as a D&D player without ever actually without wanting to admit it. So I've got sort of like the two big projects, the next Indestructibles book and then that one. And of course I want to get another holiday story out this year. That's almost how I reset my year, is writing a holiday style story for the main cast every year, just to. And that's something I like to give that away in December every year for the readers too, because I want to thank them for putting up with my craziness all year.
Awesome. Yeah, I'll look out for that one. And yeah, it's great that you have, you know, a lot of different things going on in the same universe. So you don't really have to like force book number 5. You kind of wait, like you said, till something just kind of hits you.
Mm-hmm. It's, I've got a completely non superhero book in mind that it actually came out of I was making fun of another popular book, and I won't say it because I'll look like a jerk if I say it out loud. It's not a Comic-Con style book. It's completely different genre, but I was joking. I'm like, I could do that. That's emotionally manipulative. If you do this and you do that and you do this, and then you could add this concept and blah, blah, and I'm being completely sarcastic. And 10 minutes later, I'm like, and now I love this idea and I'm going to write it. So I talked myself into writing this side project. And that's one of those ones where I'm always afraid. They tell you as an author to never let enough time pass that the audience forgets you exist. So I want to be conscious of that and always make sure there's a new Indestructiverse book of some kind, whether it's the main cast or something else. Mm-hmm. But I want to make the time to write this. It's a existential horror story that I want to write at some point. That'll be completely outside the realm of the Indestructibles, but it's a funny time to be a writer, because it used to be, oh, you can go 5 years without writing a book, and then you show up again, and everybody's like, hey, it's my favorite author, blah, blah, blah. And now it's like, if you go like a year and a half and you haven't put anything out, people start panicking, like, oh, he's never writing again. So, I mean, it's nice because it means there's always an interest in the next piece, but it's kind of intimidating for a lot of writers, myself included, with this idea that you've always got to be coming up with something new and always got to be churning out a new idea, otherwise the world will move on without you.
Yeah, because you want to put out, you know, continue to be as high quality as the first book. You know, you don't want to be, like you said, churning them out and them not to be up to the same standard. But
exactly,
you don't want to be forgotten.
Yeah, it's getting them out fast enough. And I guess I'm lucky just by the dumb luck of landing in the genre and the style that I do. You know, I'm not writing 1,000-page fantasy novels like Martin or Rothfuss, where they've got these massive, deeply researched books. I'm writing a very poppy style, so I'm not as weighed down, I think, so I'm able to kind of move a little faster. And I didn't pick the genre intentionally so I could write faster. It was just sort of, you know, this is just what I get the chance to teach sometimes because of the books. I get invited in to do like guest teaching and stuff, and I always tell new writers to write what you can't shut up about, because that's how you'll keep yourself motivated. If you can't stop talking about a topic or a type of style of writing, I didn't come up with that particular phrasing. I wish I could remember so I could give whoever told me that. That was actually something that somebody told me years ago, and I can't remember who said it. But you know, if you write about the stuff that you can't stop talking about, you'll always be motivated to write the next page, the next 1,000 words. That's kind of been that's my North Star when I write. Like, what can I not shut up about right now? It's like, oh, I want to write about were-sharks and, you know, and sleazy magicians and the last son of the Amazons. And that'll be Echo in the Sea. And now I've got, you know, I'm kind of like dueling obsessions between these, the Indestructibles thing and the horror thing, and whichever one decides it's going to dominate my brain for the next few months will be the one that gets written first. Yeah. But and that's for any new writer, that would be the one thing that I always say: don't try to write something for the market. Don't try to find something that you think will sell. Write the thing that you'll have fun writing, because none of us is so unique that we're the only one that will like it, right? So, you know, we're
hopefully,
yeah. Well, you know, sure, I'm sure that's you know, there is somebody out there that is writing, I don't know, clown surfer romance novels that nobody else is going to read, but
now that idea is going to get in your head, and it'll be
an awesome book, wouldn't it? And he's a sad clown too. He only finds joy in surfing and falls in love with a hot dog vendor. I don't know. No, this will be the next
cut you off there before we don't get any more Indestructibles books.
That's going to end up being Emily's fan fiction in the next book. They'll find out she's writing a book about a clown. Speaking of, it is funny to have a character that you can freely admit is she definitely writes fan fiction somewhere online. She's totally writing Sherlock fan fiction right now. For any of the writers listening there, there's a temptation to go, okay, I want to write young adult, or I want to write, you know, strong female heroine, or I want to write this. And it's like, just write what makes you happy, and that'll get you through it, because otherwise you never finish. So, and that's the one thing that'll set you apart from all the other writers out there, is if you can finish a project and see it through to the end, you're miles ahead of the competition.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question. Was your one piece of advice for writers? So
no.
Nailed it.
Look at that! I stole your question away from you. Sorry about that.
No, yeah, that was good.
Well, I'll tell you the best writing advice I ever got from an editor was done is good, which was when it was in newspapers. He says done is good, and he says good would be better, but done is good because we can fix done. You can't fix something that doesn't exist. So yeah, done is good, and write what you can't shut up about. That's That'll get you started. After that, it's all elbow grease, I guess.
Awesome. And the other motivation to help new writers get started. Can you think about the first piece that you ever wrote, whether it was professionally or just, you know, the first terrible short story you wrote in elementary school?
Oh God, I've been writing stories since I could hold a crayon. So, but I do know, cause I can't remember like as a kid what I wrote, cause there was so much of it, but there's a couple of horrifically bad novels that I wrote in college that will never see the light of day that I sometimes will read a little bit of just to remind myself of the depths of how bad you can get. And just the whole, you can see the growth of where you come from, because that's actually what's good for writers is, you know, you think you think you got to get it right the first time. And the idea is just keep writing, keep throwing ideas there, and that one will suck, but the next one will be better. And the next one after that will be even better. And the next one after that will be even better. And hopefully eventually you get to the point where you're good enough to get published and find an audience. But you know, there's this fear of getting it perfect the first time, and every writer has some awful short stories in their collection. Yeah. and the temptation is to burn them, but I really think every writer should keep them just so they can remind themselves where they've come from, you know. Keep those short stories and pull them out because then you can look at, well, I guess I'm not that bad. Because look how far I've come from when I was bad then. And then I'll go back, like, I'll do, like, you know, live readings and stuff at libraries and reading even the first book. And first book's only 3.5 years old. And even now I've learned things between each book that I feel like I've gotten better at. And, oh, I'd change that sentence structure. Or I'd change this bit in that chapter. Or I'd rework that dialogue a little bit. So even a couple of years later, I'm already looking at things that I've learned that I didn't know about when the first book came out. I joke around that because as I'm getting 5 books in, I kind of have to go back and reread my own books and remind myself some of the plot points. And I'm actually kind of afraid. I wish I had built a wiki page or something so I could cheat, because I'm so afraid to go back and reread and judge my own writing, even though it's already out there and I can't take it back.
Because the fans will find continuity errors a lot better than you will.
Yeah, well, I actually totally asked the fans to remember something I couldn't one day. There's a newspaper in the city where the Indestructibles are based out of, and I knew I thought about naming it, but I couldn't remember if I ever named it, and suddenly I needed to know that for verifiable fact, and I kind of like crowdsourced it. I offered a prize if anybody could remember if I named the newspaper. Excuse me. And it turns out that, like, the city, I never named the city, and that's sort of an intentional choice, but I had done something similar with the paper, and a couple of readers got back to me and they got some free comics from me for doing my research for me. Things like someone had asked me, there's a villain, for anybody that might read the books at some point listening, who has a cyborg arm. And you think by book two, I could remember if it was his left or his right. And it's one of those things where I got to go back to the first chapter he was in and find out whether it was left or his right. I can't remember if it's his left or his right arm. And now that it's 4 books in and close to 500,000 words of content, there's a whole lot of stuff I don't remember off the top of my head that I live in fear of the continuity error.
Yeah, that's a simple one to mess up that someone will get you for.
Yep. It's funny. There's certain things like somebody had corrected me on a color description of Emily's costume in the first book. And it was a year before I realized that I was misremembering the color, and I never re-referenced it. It was a one-off detail that the readers picked up better than I did. And like, all right, I guess she's committed to that color combination. I wrote it. That's me. I picked that.
Someone's halfway through sewing their cosplay and come out with a book contradicting it, and they're like,
"Yeah, I was talking to someone earlier today about." Yeah, they're asking how many cosplayers I've seen doing the Indestructibles, and I said, one of the things that I love about the cosplay community is how precise it is. Like, cosplayers like to get it right, and the challenge with something that only appears as a description in the text is there's no visual reference, so all they have to go on is what's on the page, and so I better stick with that, because otherwise I'm messing with people's minds. But just the fact that it doesn't there's no visual reference. I've been talking to someday I'm gonna invite a couple of artists to do their interpretations of the characters. I'd love to see what people who are far more talented than I am visually come up with to put them on the page. I'd love to see what some artists that don't do stick figures like I do could come up with.
And then it can become the Indestructibles comic book.
Yeah, it's someone had asked about that. I'm like, would you ever do it as a comic book? I'm like, I'd love to, but it takes away something from the readers in terms of what they how they imagine it. And I'm afraid to take that away from the committed readers, like sort of if lightning strikes and it ever becomes a film or a TV show, then that the game is off. But I like the freedom that the readers have to imagine what the characters look like and who they see them as. Although I do on social media, I'll do a casting call a couple times a year. Like, hey, who would you have play Billy? just out of curiosity. And I love seeing who people come up with, because it's always a little different every time.
Yeah, I'm definitely one of the people that prefers reading the book before anything else comes out, so you can kind of have your own imagination in there.
Yeah, I'm a purist like that too. I like to, especially if it's something that's been on my reading list that I haven't gotten a chance to get to yet. I'm like, wait, I gotta hurry up. I gotta get this. I gotta read this before it comes out. I want to have my vision of it first. But on the other hand, because I came out of film, I've got so much respect for like adaptations and stuff. I like to, a good adaptation can bring something completely new and fantastic to a story that has already been read a million times too.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Well, yeah, Matt, this has been awesome. I don't want to keep you too much longer. I know you probably have another 6 hours of writing to do before you get to bed.
I'm heading off to, I'm on a talk show tomorrow morning in New York. So somehow my insomniac rear end has to get to the train station by 6 o'clock in the morning. And this is not going to be pretty. If you see a news report coming out of Boston about a zombie walking into the Amtrak, it's just me. Don't worry about it.
It'd be a good way to make sure your news ready tomorrow.
Oh yeah.
great. Well, other than finding that news interview at some point, where can people learn more about you and the books?
I am overly present on social media. I'm almost painfully reachable. I've got the website, The Indestructibles book, theindestructiblesbook.com, because theindestructibles.com was taken. Darn it. You can find me on Twitter at Matt Fillion, on Facebook at Matthew Fillion, or Who is Indestructible? Because The Indestructibles was taken on Facebook, so it's Who is Indestructible. There's a page about the books that that I do sort of like geek culture stuff, and then I talk writing process on my author page at Matthew Fillion. And the books are everywhere. Wherever you like to buy books, they're usually there, which is nice to say. it's kind of, you know, again, if you had the 12-year-old me hear that, he'd probably have a meltdown. So it's just like going to Comic-Con. It's hard to believe that.
Ever
that's
books
true.
Are sold? Wherever both books stores?
Yeah, I know, right?
Borders and Barnes & Noble?
Does Borders even exist anymore? I'm sure it exists somewhere in the country, right?
It's done. Well, no. Yeah, maybe there's some independent shops now, but
yeah, it's God. I hope they stick around. It's funny, as an author, we've all got a love hate relationship with Amazon. They they're an easy way for people to find your books, and they help people stay readers. But it'd be nice to see other options out there, just so that people have the. I'd rather humans have other choices, have options. Options are good. But yeah, Barnes & Noble, Amazon, your local bookstore, libraries will often have it as well. So, and yeah, I'm always happy to, if your listeners are burgeoning writers and ever want to talk shop, Twitter and Facebook, I'm always happy to talk shop even with people who haven't read my books, because I love talking about writing. It's what I do, and it's what I can't shut up about.
Yeah. Awesome. All right, cool. So yeah, I got to, so now it's time for me to either start writing something, or more likely probably keep reading your second book. So
well, you can do it. It's possible to do both. I recommend you. I encourage you to pursue both, because I like my book, but don't let the wall of writing out there get you down. It's the best time in history to be a writer right now. There's so many ways to become one, and there's so much opportunity out there that if you got a story to tell, stay motivated and tell it, because there's it really is. It's historically great time to be an author right now. Mm-hmm.
Awesome. All right, yeah, Matt, thanks so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me. It's been great talking to you.
All right, guys, awesome interview with Matt Fillion. It was so cool to talk to him. One of the things that I really liked that he highlighted was when he was talking about his writing process, he mentioned how he likes to plan things out and outline really specifically, and then write the whole book in one long, one relatively short 3-month burst. And he mentioned how, you know, some writers are planners like him, and some are pantsers who just kind of like to fly by the seat of their pants and discover the story as they go. And he also mentioned how he writes best, and he chose to write at night, and that started as working around his full-time writing career as a freelancer and, you know, kind of finding the time whenever he could to actually write The Indestructibles. So I think the biggest takeaway from those is just to find out when you work best and how you work best. So, you know, especially for writers, but really for anyone trying to start a geek brand in any way, it's, you know, it's probably going to involve working at night sometimes. It's great for freelancers who have a little bit more freedom. They can figure out when it works best in their schedule, but really finding a way to fit it into your schedule in a way that makes you the most productive, and then choosing your style of work. So, you know, whether you're a planner or a pantser, you know, don't follow his advice and, you know, plan for a couple months and then write for 3 months just because it works for him. It may not work for you. So, you know, that's really experimentation and working with whichever way you're comfortable, and then kind of understanding that about yourself, giving yourself the tools to do that continuously. And that's one of the things that I'm working on for my entrepreneur journey, mostly in finding time in my schedule and figuring out how Under the Capes and other projects work with my schedule. So I would actually like to write fiction at some point. I haven't put much focus on it in the past, but it's something that I'd like to do in the future. But for right now, I'm a freelance marketer and writer for marketing and tech companies. So that's I do have a lot of freedom during the day. I work from home. So right now I'm trying to figure out how to best balance, mainly right now, how to best balance my freelance career with Under the Capes. And, you know, because it's easy to just spend most of my time building the business, and the geek brand kind of falls by the wayside a little bit. So using my time a little bit more wisely, because I do have the freedom to create my own schedule, I'm working to create it in a way that gives me a little bit more time for the side passions. So that's kind of what I am working on this week. The other thing I am hoping to fit into my schedule over the next a little over a month is to create a new cosplay for New York Comic Con, which is October 5th, I believe. So that's a short period of time. Haven't got started yet. Only have some basic ideas of, you know, some simple stuff I'd like to throw together. Hopefully my guest next week will help with that. I'm talking to Kaipira Cosplay. So that'll be a great discussion with her. She creates some amazing cosplays. So you can look forward to that interview next Monday. And this week, be sure to follow Matt Fillion on Facebook at / Matthew Fillion, and Twitter and Instagram at Matt Fillion. And The Indestructibles, you can find at theindestructiblesbook.com or wherever books are sold. And I'll include links to all of that in the show notes at underthecapes.com/episode19. And if you like this episode, be sure to give us a rating or a review on iTunes or Stitcher. That would really help out a lot. And reach out on Twitter or Facebook at Under the Capes, or on Instagram at Under the Capes Podcast. As always, thanks so much for listening, guys. I really appreciate it, and I will see you next time. Thanks.